Welcome to another episode of Living an Ultralife. And this week we've got a trio of wild and crazy guys that I have met, mainly volunteering at ultras up around the Lynchburg area, and just got to meet them, and they're crazy. So tonight we've got the three of the four race directors of the Mountain Masochist. So tonight we've got Brenton Swires, Jordan Cooter, and Tim Spaulding on, and it is going to be a blast. You three ready to go for a little run?
Let's go.
Let's do it.
There we go. So let's start with the senior member of the group, Mr. Tim Spaulding, who will be running Western States for the third time this year. And we all think that stinks, but we're proud that he's still running it, even though we never get in and probably never will get. Well, Brent got in last year, so I can't say never. But Tim will be running his third Western States. Tim, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are when you're not out running these badass ultras, you know, what you do for work, family, all that good stuff, okay?
Sure. First off, Mike, thanks so much for having us on. I'm excited to be joining you and talking about ultras. It's always a good time. I guess I am the senior member of the group. I am an attorney. I do contract negotiations for the University of Virginia. It is an objectively boring job, but I enjoy it. I got a couple kids, three kids, and live out in Lynchburg, Virginia. Came out here from Virginia Beach, where I believe you are, Mike, right?
Yeah. Cool. So let's move to Mr. Brenton Swires.
Yo, when I'm not running and not chasing around children, I work at Genworth Financial. I work there with Jordan. We work together. I got two kids. Yep. Got connected with Horton through a random running class that I took as a single credit. I needed to graduate, and the rest is history. Ran my first ultra, somehow wound up with Holiday Lake 50K as the RD with Jamie, my wife. And now we've got Mountain Masochist as well with the three guys here.
That's crazy. So, okay, we're going to get more into detail there, but let's move over to Jordan Cooter.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the youngest of the group, so I think it's appropriate I went last. I'm also probably the newest to ultras. You know, if Michael Newhall was here, we're about dead even. I'd give a few months, give or take. But as Bryn mentioned, I work at a company with him. I don't know, it's been over a decade we've worked together. I am the only Lynchburg local of the group, so born and raised in the area. I think that's what puts a little bit of extra fire or passion under me, is seeing some of these races grow and stay true to the roots. Outside of running, I have a few kids as well, young kids. We are in our kitchen together as a family probably 5 or 6 nights a week, just hanging out and cooking. So we love that kind of thing. Involved in my church locally, and what the other guy said, like getting the kids outside, finding new trails. The
ultras really take up a lot of time,
you know?
It does. Ultras do take up just a wee bit of time. So did you guys all meet at a certain race, or how did you, and like you and Brenton have been working together for a decade, but how did you three meet? Was it at a race, or how did this happen?
Tim, do you remember?
I remember, actually, I met Brenton. I needed a ride out to the start of Mountain Masochist in 2013, I guess it was. And I scored a ride with Brenton Swires. I didn't know who he was, but trying to think.
It was a Promised Land Dark Side training run.
Oh, yeah.
We all got there early because the Dark Side's about 15 miles, and we all wanted like 20 or so. And Bren, myself, Tim, and Newhall all ended up there, probably a couple other people. And I think that was in 19. And that first section, you know, we kind of all broke off when the training run started, but those, that first hour or so, however long we were running the add-on miles, was I think when we synced up, and literally Masochist was what we talked a lot about. I think it was, you know, I knew that was going to be one of my first really long races, and you would all run it, and me and Newhall were both going to run it together, and we chatted, and then, you know, I mentioned post that run, we kind of got our numbers together, caught up, and then COVID happened, and then we just stayed in touch, like, hardcore through 2020.
That's crazy. So, living in Lynchburg, you guys have got to be, like, loving all the trails all over the place near you, right?
Definitely. I think I take it for granted. So I'm from Florida, and I go back and visit family. My mom and dad live down there, and there's some trails, like there's little tiny parks that they've got a quarter mile trail that go out and back or something like that. But mostly you're just running sidewalks and roads. And to think that here in Lynchburg, over at Liberty's campus, Candler's Mountain, is 50 plus miles of single track trail combined.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's 10, 15 minutes from us.
Oh,
Yeah.
that's awesome.
We're there weekly, at
Yeah.
least.
Yeah. And if
Yeah.
you, I mean, honestly, I don't think people really realize it, but yeah, between Liberty and just all the trails in the city limits, and then there's another 10K in Bedford County, there's probably 70 something miles of single track.
Oh my
It's
gosh.
yeah, and that's not including the trails up in the mountains. That's just, in Lynchburg City proper.
Wow.
Yeah.
So no Mount Trashmore Hill work for you guys, huh?
No. No.
No.
It comes
Although
naturally.
we
When we can.
do see a lot of people on this little power line hill at Liberty running up and down and up and down, to get as much gain as they can. So we've made a note to the Crozet running community and called it Little Carlos. So yeah, it's kind of funny. People just kind of search for the vert in Lynchburg, but it's there. I mean, you can run around Candler's for 10 miles, and if you know the right route, you're getting 2K of elevation easily.
That's awesome. I missed that because I started ultra running in Wyoming. And so 1,000 feet of vert was going outside my house and running 5 miles. I missed that because I have to create it on this wonderful mound of trash here.
Yeah. Well, and it is interesting, seeing friends like you and Brian Million, director of Terrapin, building up elevation, and you're like, oh man, you're just kind of hitting those hills. So yeah, it's easy to take it for granted, but it's also, I mean, like I mentioned, I came from Virginia Beach, and one of the things that really captivated me moving out here was the proximity to the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah.
I was always, just kind of out there, kind of mystical in my head, living up in Western New York, and just 25 minutes and you're on the AT, and you can go north and you can go to Maine, you can go south and you can go to Georgia, and it's awesome having such a historic trail so close by. It's a pretty magical area to live.
Yeah, it's I just the Appalachian Trail is still one of my favorite places to go run. When Jenny and I were moving back here to Virginia Beach from Wyoming, I thought the Appalachian Trail would be like the super highway, sort of like buttery trails and everything, because so many people are on it, until I went and ran it for the first time and went, oh my God, this is the most technical, windy up and down trail I've ever been on. It's amazingly awesome.
Yeah, it's a special place.
All right, so let's jump into some of your race stuff. So, Tim, you've been running ultras the longest, or has Brenton been running longer? Which one of you is longer?
Brenton has.
Okay, so Brenton, let's start with you. So, what got you into ultras?
I swore, so high school, back up a little bit. I did the whole track and field cross country thing, never did more than maybe 10 miles or so at a time. And I get to senior year, and my goal was to finish a marathon with a friend of mine. So we did a road marathon in Ocala, Florida. And we had our long run was maybe 12 miles. Finished that 3:58 was my time. And it was a disaster. I hated it. I couldn't walk for a week. And I swore it off. Nothing. Wasn't going to do anything close to that again. Came to Liberty, did some like local 5K, 10K stuff, did the Virginia 10 miler a couple years. And then I needed a credit to graduate. So I found a running class, because who doesn't want to run for school? And that
Right.
happened to be David Horton's class. So he's been doing a running class, at a beginner class and an advanced class since, I don't know, last 30 years or something like that. It's been a long time since he started it. And had no idea who he was, had no idea what ultra marathons were, barely knew what trail running was at the time. You meet, took attendance, did what we needed to do, and then we just went out. Typically, we ran up to Candler's, the mountains, did some trails up there, came back. It was an hour and 15 minute class, and we usually ran for about an hour of it. So got into that, and decided to run my first ultra, which was Holiday Lake. That was 2010. And I can't even remember what my time was. It was a snow year, so 6 to 6 or 8 inches of snow on the ground in 2010, and ran 6+ hours. And that was my introduction to it. Did LUS that first year, and now I'm 60 some or 70 races, ultra marathons into it at this point.
That's awesome. So LUS, what does that stand for?
Yeah, Lynchburg Ultra Series.
Okay, so and what races are part of the Lynchburg Ultra Series?
Holiday Lake 50K, Terrapin Mountain 50K, which is Brian Millian's race, Promised Land 50K, and that's Horton's race, and then a Mountain Masochist 50 miler, which we're the directors of.
Wow.
So all
None of
four.
them really easy races.
No. People would think that maybe Holiday Lake would be easy, but it's challenging in its own right because it's flat, so you want to run. And run, most people, that's their first ultra, maybe. There's a lot of people that go out there and never done it before. They've never done that distance and they think they can run the whole thing. And they're done with the first loop and they think, oh, this isn't that bad. And they go out in that second loop and they hit the wall.
Yeah. Holiday is not easy because there's weather in
There's weather.
February.
Oh, yeah,
So
definitely weather.
never an easy race. All right, so let's move to Tim because he's like the second senior ultra runner here. How did this whole thing start? Where did it start? All that good stuff.
Unlike Brent, I didn't do high school track or anything like that. Running was kind of one of those things where every once in a while I would do some running here and there. I started running maybe a little bit more regularly in college, dating my wife because she enjoyed running. And so I suffered to spend time with her. And, you know, what kind of really got me interested in ultras, though, was when we moved to Lynchburg 2009. I remember reading a story about a guy running Mountain Masochist in this 50-mile race. And it just, I couldn't wrap my head around a 50-mile race. It blew my mind. And so the guy mentioned he did most of his training and a park that's on the north side of town where we used to live right next door to called Peaksby Park. There's probably 8 or 10 miles of trails there. And so I was like, man, that's right by our house. So that's what kind of really got me interested in trail running was just hearing about this 50-mile race. But when I really started running in earnest, you know, my wife and I had been running and it was 2012. My wife was pregnant with her third child and we were driving up to visit family up in Canada. And I remember noticing that the seatbelt was enveloped by my gut. I was like, oh, this isn't good. And so that's really what got me into running. I got to that point of like, okay, I want to do a trail race. So I did the Terrapin Half and then I did Promised Land as my first trail race. And then that year I also did Masochist and it really opened my eyes. And there was something amazing about looking down at a watch and seeing a mile distance that you never thought you'd be able to go. I think
Right.
my longest run to that point was, I think, the Dark Side training run. It was like 15 miles. And I remember hitting like 15 and a half miles and just being like, whoa, this is crazy. And then clocking 26.3 miles and just being like, I've never run a marathon. I don't even know what I'm doing out here.
Wow.
But it really kind of lit the fire for me was just this ability to, you know, push the boundaries and see what you can do. And to me, ultra running is all about testing yourself. And for a lot of us, it's, you know, fighting and chasing demons to some extent. But I guess in life, it always felt like you know where the boundary is, right? Someone says, oh, the fence is over there, that you can't do more than this. And this is this part, this is the limits of what people can do. Or you set your own. And then you realize, you know, one day, I think how people get into ultras are like, oh, I want to go see where that line is. And you keep going and going and going. And for those of us who keep going longer and longer distances, I think there's a switch that's not working properly. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. And so running Promised Land that first year and then Masochist, and it's really been something I enjoy and getting to know the community and especially these guys. And yeah, it's just a great, great part of life.
Awesome. Have you done the whole Lynchburg Ultra Series?
No, I've not. I have not run Holiday Lake and I don't have any interest in it. So that's the one I haven't done. But
Okay.
thankfully, I'd wanted to run the Beast and I'd had two not great runnings at Grindstone. And, you know, when they finally sold that to UTMB and changed the course, I felt like, okay, no, I don't really ever need to run Holiday Lake. So sorry,
There
Brent.
you
Great
go.
race. I want
Awesome.
everybody to run it, but I don't want
There
to.
you
I'll probably
go.
run it one of these years and then I'll complain, but.
It's because of the weather, Brenton. If you could change the weather, it'd be all right.
Oh, if I could change it, I'd be right there with you.
There you go. All right, so let's go to Mr. Jordan Cooter. How'd this whole running thing start for you?
Oh man, so yeah, again, I think we're all pretty different in how it kicked off. I was not really in any kind of sports for most of my upbringing. I was homeschooled. I was pretty active. Went to a private school the last couple of years of high school and played in sports, and didn't have a lot of agility. But I ran when I was forced to run in high school, and so got out of high school. It's kind of funny. I moved overseas for a year, and biked a lot. I was living in China and everyone biked, so I biked a lot and kind of found like, oh man, this is really interesting and I like this and I like to see progress. And so I started biking and I was like, oh, maybe I should run. And I was like, maybe I should start swimming. So I honestly thought I was gonna get into the triathlon stuff and
Okay.
move back home and was like, I'm gonna go for my longest run. Let me see if I can run. I think I was gonna run like a half marathon just like through where my parents lived and where I was staying at the time. I remember finishing, getting home, and then having some kind of issue, like really crazy pain and issues. Like I pushed myself a little far, to be honest, and just didn't know what I was doing. I worked that out, but after that, it was almost nothing in terms of running for maybe over a decade. I just totally stopped. So I wouldn't say I had a lot of running experience. I think I had an interest at one point. Through that period of not running, before I got married, I guess you could say like kind of a meathead, like a gym junkie. And I was big into bodybuilding, lifting weights, bulking up. And it's funny now, my now brother-in-law had a season of ultra running. I remember knowing him even before I was dating my wife. Basically, I was like, you shouldn't run that far. You should never run 50 miles, 100 miles. That's crazy. It's not good for you. And then you fast forward some years. And I haven't been doing much of anything. I got married and my son was born, so my oldest, and we get home from the hospital and my mother-in-law's over and she's like, just get some fresh air. You guys have had a lot. So I go outside and for whatever reason, I'm like, I'm gonna run around the block. And I made it like four houses down the road and just was dead. And it was kind of a wake-up call of just like, I need to do something. I've got a kid, I need to get some energy back. So I just started running at the Lynchburg Road Series, 5Ks, 10Ks. I signed up for those as motivation and I ran some of those. And at some point, I think Brent and I both had shifted to the company we're working at now. And I kind of went over to him and was like, man, I feel like I've hit a wall. Like, I don't know what I need to do. And he was like, sign up for Holiday Lake, which was not his race yet. It was still Horton's race. He was just like, sign up for Holiday Lake. And I was like, what is Holiday Lake? He's like, it's a 50K. And I was like, what's 50K? Like I don't know the math. And he tells me, and then I'm like, I've run a 10 mile race. I don't know how to wrap my head around that. And he's like, if you do it, I'll talk to Jamie, Bren's wife, and she'll build you a plan, which I'd never used a plan for anything. So I was like, okay. So I thought about it, and I think we were all at dinner together, my wife and his wife and some others, and talked to her and I finally was like, okay, let's do this. So she built a plan. I followed it, I'd say almost to a T, ran that race, and it was an awful weather year. I remember it being like freezing rain and mud. It was in 19, but it almost never affected me. Like I was just like, I'm gonna just finish this thing. I've gotta finish it. And I finished, Horton was there and it was a whole thing. The next day my legs were up on the couch and I signed up the remainder of the races in LUS.
Oh, wow, you're kidding
So
me.
I'm sitting there with my feet up. Like I thought this was just to do the thing and get the experience of the training. To be honest, like getting into it, I was like, I want to lose a bunch of weight. And I did. Me and Newhall claimed like we're the big boys of the group because we both lost like 70 or 80 pounds, getting
That's
into
awesome.
it. But it was just from, getting active. So but I went home and I was like, I met so many people and I accomplished something really big. And so I want to see how far this can go. So signed up for Terrapin, signed up for Promised Land, signed up for Mascus. And my wife was like, you're crazy. And I was like, I know. And there was so much in there that happened that was like, you don't even know what you're doing. But it kind of stuck. It wasn't as much the racing that stuck, but it was the environment. It was like I was
Yeah.
getting into stuff with these guys, with other runners, with Horton, the training, pushing myself to a limit. I always said that's not possible. And I think I got to experience pushing past that. And then I won't say it's a mistake. I think it could be for a lot of people, but going into Maskus, I decided to throw in my application for Hellgate the same year,
Oh
first
my
year of
gosh.
the running. And I had, again, Brent and I are friends. I've been helping Horton with trail running a lot, trail work. And so I said, yeah, well, okay, like there's no way, but also I don't know if I could even finish the thing. And then I get that dreaded email that he accepted my application. So my first year of ultra running was the whole LUS. I was scared of Maskus, so I actually ended up running Table Rock 50K in September of that year. And then at the end of the year, closing out with Hellgate 100K. So I ran, I guess, six ultras my first year of really running anything more than a half marathon. And I paid a little bit of a price for that coming back, but it was wild. Yeah. But
Wow. Winner, winner, chicken dinner right there,
That's
man.
right.
Dags.
Yeah, I've been known as a go big or go home, but what I can appreciate most is through my life I have not held hobbies for a long time. I've brewed beer, I've done barbecue, I've done all these things. They lasted, a year or two. And so I knew Ultra was something to stay after 2 or 3 years because it was really kind of became embedded. And so yeah, that's the rest was kind of history. Locked it
Awesome.
in and maybe went in too fast, but I guess it
Hey,
paid off.
jump in with both feet, man. That's the way to do it.
That's right.
So, Breton, let's go to you for just a second because you've known David Horton probably the longest of everybody, right?
Just in this group, yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, just in this group, you're the one who's known
Yeah.
David Horton longest. Tell us a little bit about David Horton and why he's such a mythical figure in
Gosh.
the ultra running sport.
I'm going to go back to high school again because I had my track and cross country coach who is really only like 10 years older than me. Now actually went back and visited him when I was in Florida over spring break and we hung out. And we just got chatting and you just never realize when you're a high schooler how old your teachers are. But he was pretty instrumental and just became a part of my life. He was in my wedding and we've connected still throughout the year, but I've always got this thing where I connect with, we'll call it like a coach person, maybe. So Horton was kind of like that coach and someone I grasped onto and I looked up to him and what he was able to accomplish when I got into his class. Like at first, he was just a crazy old man who said crazy things, slightly inappropriate things in a college setting. But
Still that
as
same
I,
guy.
yeah, still the same guy,
Hasn't changed. Yeah,
right.
nope.
No, hasn't changed. Actually, I think he's a little more mellow now, believe it or not. But I took his class twice. The first year, I don't know, I didn't get to really know him all that much. It was the second year when Jamie and I, she was his assistant. So she took the class, became his assistant. So when I started getting interested in her and then started dating her, is when I would go to his office fairly regularly during the week just to hang out with her, and he happened to be in there. So his office, it's like a museum. It's crazy. There's pictures of him, and there's magazines, and there's books, and there's trophies, and there's plaques of his JFK runs, and winning JFK, and winning Hard Rock, and all this stuff that at first I didn't know about. But as I got to know him and got to know about all these races, I'm like, dang, this guy really knew what he was doing. Like, he had some talent. And I need someone who's gonna like yell at me and push me. And he was that guy. He was always poking and prodding. You can't do that, and you can't run this. And me and my pride would be like, yeah, I'm gonna show you, old man. I'm gonna go do this thing. And that's who he is. He doesn't change. Whether you're sitting in a long car ride with him in his truck, and it's just the two of you, or he's in front of 400 runners. He's that guy. He is who he is. Doesn't change.
So, how many races has David Horton started?
So Mountain Maskus was the first, 1983.
Right.
Then he started Holiday Lake, but Holiday Lake wasn't in February. Then it was Promised Land, and then he had Hellgate. And so he still has Promised Land and Hellgate, but I now have Holiday Lake with Jamie, and then four of us are race directors for Mountain Maskus.
So then, where in the picture did Clark Zeeland start directing some of them?
Tim, you want to take that one?
Yeah. So my understanding is Clark was, one of Horton's first understudies. I don't know who first, but kind of a lot of us think of as a precursor to Brent.
Right. Yeah,
Somebody who is
I would
some
agree with that statement totally, Quentin.
yeah,
Yeah.
really somebody who was mentored by Horton in the sport. And so my understanding is with Horton's help, Clark mapped out and started what was originally the Terrapin Marathon, I think. I mean, the Terrapin 50K and half marathon has always been was always his race till Brian took it over. But yeah, Brent, do you recall on that one? I think there was a marathon at
Yeah,
the
it
very
was a
first
marathon.
year.
Yeah, it was a marathon distance thing. I
Yeah, they
think, yeah,
probably
just the
didn't.
first year, and then it went to the 50K.
Yeah. And then so Clark had Terrapin. He took over Mascus. I guess Horton has this thing of passing off races after 25-ish years, roughly. And he passed off Masochist to Clark. And then Clark started Grindstone.
Yeah, I did not realize that Clark started Grindstone.
Yep.
Wow, that's amazing. So Dr. Horton still has Promised Land and Hellgate, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. So now, Brenton, how did you assume the race directing of Holiday Lake? How did that come about?
I don't know if it was in a car ride or if he came to my house. So Horton has this thing where he just shows up to your house at times.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, you don't know he's coming. He just knocks on the door, or sometimes he just lets himself in, and it's funny. But it was one of the either in a car or he stopped at my house one day and he's like, "Hey, how would you like to take Holiday Lake? Think about it." And that was it. Basically, I didn't say yes or no at the time. I talked to Jamie about it first, and that was 2020 because I took it over in 2021.
Okay. So this was during COVID.
So
It was
it was right.
2019.
No, so he
Because
directed it 2020.
yes, but Jamie shadowed 2020.
You're right.
Because you and me both ran at our last Holiday Lake in
Yeah, okay. So
2020.
it was right before the, yeah, it was right before the 2020. So yeah, I guess 2019 is when he had approached us about it. And that was 2020 was the last year I ran Holiday Lake, and then 21 was COVID. So February 2020, we heard about this COVID thing out in China, and what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, everything shut down after that race.
Yep.
It's
Wow.
crazy.
So
Yeah, that
Holiday
was
Lake
it.
was
Not much.
kind of the last race that happened until like the spring of 21, right?
Yeah,
Well, no,
it
we
was.
still Hellgate. We ran
Till
Hellgate in
Hellgate.
2020
Yeah.
because the governor almost had a curfew, but it happened the day after Hellgate started, so we were able to race it.
Yeah,
Oh
that's
my
right.
gosh.
Yeah, it was actually funny because it was Jimmy Rhodes. That had a fabulous meme that was basically the governor said nothing good happens after midnight, and he used that for Hellgate,
That's
and it was like
awesome.
perfect because Hellgate starts at 12:01 a.m.
Yeah, that, oh my gosh, that's awesome. Wow. So you take over the first year that you and Jamie race directed Holiday Lake was 2021 or
2021.
2022?
Yep, masked, socially distanced, wave starts, the whole nine yards. And that morning of the race, we had quarter inch of ice or so, half inch of ice that decided to hit overnight, and probably about 100 runners never made it to the start line. They all got
Yeah.
stuck about 5 miles out from the course or from the start, the camp, Holiday Lake 4-H camp.
Yeah.
Now,
2021 was my first year that I volunteered at Holiday Lakes. And I remember going out to the aid station, and the aid station crew hadn't gotten there yet. And going, so now what do you do? So, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, when it was a mess. Trial by fire. First year, thought we knew what we were doing. It was challenging as it was because it was COVID. So we're trying to follow all the rules and we're like reading through all the regulations. How far are people supposed to be apart? And can we even have this? Yada, yada, yada. And we sent the first wave of runners out, and the second wave was lining up. And someone local runner comes up to me and says, "Hey, there's like 100 people stuck. There's one car blocking the road on the road into the camp, and no one can get around." And that was it. From there, we had I sent off the second wave, and then I had like three people or something in that third wave. And at
Gosh.
that point, I just as people came in, I let them go. They ran
Yep.
in, what's his face from Iron Mountain? Kevin Townsend. I always remember him. His wife stayed with his car 4 miles from the camp. So he ran 4 miles to the start line, started the race, and did the whole 50K because he was, I think he was doing the series that year and he didn't want to miss it.
Wasn't it his
That's
like
crazy.
20 somethings running of it as
It might,
well?
yeah, I think it was all, yeah, it was his 20th running of it. Yep.
But hey, that's where chip timing really helped you out, right? Because you were able to just send them through and they got chipped.
Yeah, big shout out to Josh Gilbert.
Yeah.
That Horton doesn't do chip timing races, and that was 2021 was the first year we had it, and the first year that the race was chip timed. Without that, it would have been a total cluster.
No kidding. And who chip times Holiday like now?
Josh Gilbert.
Okay, so okay. And Josh is who does Terrapin also, right? Okay. Wow. All right. So now you guys have all three run Mount Masochist, right? Why?
I
Why?
ran it 2010, the last year they had it, starting at the visitor center on the Blue Ridge Parkway. And you start at the James River Visitor Center, you run north on the parkway to an orange cone. Everyone turns around the cone, runs south on the parkway, and you get off onto Route 501, which is a fairly busy two-lane highway. And you're on that for 6 miles or something before you jumped into the trails and then ran all the way to Montebello. And after that, they
Wow.
changed it, still point
That's
to
why it was
point.
a fast course.
It was a fast course, yep.
Yeah.
So
Oh, Mike, you.
what year did they change it to where it starts now?
It was so. What's funny is out of the group, Michael Newell and I ran the last time it was a point to point in 2019. So we ran it point to point. At that point, they had been running from the KOA camp, so they no longer were on the parkway. I think that was some issues with. Permits or something, they stopped allowing that. So for some years they had started the KOA camp. They had this kind of backdoor trail, and then the rest of the, for the most part, the rest of the course was kind of a original point to point. And I believe they had to cancel in 2020, and then due to a number of things, they started the sort of out and back with some loops as of 2022.
So, who wants to kind of take this and describe the Mountain Masochist Trail now?
That's cooter.
Cooter.
All right, so Cooter, go for it.
All right. I don't know why. I guess it's I have a strange thing in my brain for this, but
You
yeah,
do it at
so
the pre-race,
it's
so it's you.
yeah, I do I have assumed that responsibility. So it's interesting now, I think what I'll do is I'll just go through the 50-mile course because at this point, we have a the 50 miles, the kind of OG distance, and that's gonna stay for good. But we also have a 50K distance, which assumes a lot of the 50-mile course currently, as well as of last year, for some interesting reasons, we very last minute started a 100K course, and we decided to go ahead and keep that this year to see kind of what the interest is like for that. So I'll just do the 50-mile course and we start at the Montebello Country Store. So there's a campground. We've so far, honestly, I think since we've kind of taken it over, we've sold out all those campsites every year, which is a lot of fun, a lot of activity the night before the race. We kick off at that store early morning on a Saturday, first Saturday of November, and everyone kind of heads out on a very brief period of gravel. They go up towards what a lot of people know as kind of the Spy Rock route into the mountains for several miles, and then ultimately hit a trail that is not often used, the Lovingston Trail. So we try to give it a lot of love when we do trail work and marking, but that kind of zigzags and winds through the mountains. You're running net gain for really the first 4 to 5 miles. There's stretches in there that are kind of leveled out, but for the most part, you're running up. And then you head in, and when you get out of the woods about mile 8, you hit some of that beloved gravel. And so you're running gravel for a bit, and at about mile 11 or 12, you hit an aid station that's right really at the parking lot of Mount Pleasant and Coal Mountain, which is pretty familiar to a lot of people in the area. And that's an aid station that gets hit a few times for the 50-mile course, and really most distances. One really great ad that we've all agreed on is when they added the sort of out and back concept, they added in the hotel trail, which really runs sort of around the outside of Coal Mountain. And it's just a beautiful, really a kind of like a butter trail. Like you're winding in and out of the different valleys and going in and out of the mountain, crossing some streams, crossing some meadows. It's gorgeous. Go over the AT actually at one point when you pass the shelter and head down and hit some gravel with that takes you all the way down to Route 60. So at that point, that was always the midpoint of the point-to-point 50-mile course. You cross over 60 originally and hit that aid station. That's where drop bags can be left. It's very easy access for crew, families, friends, what have you. And so for the 50-miler, now it's the turnaround. That's really, I think we'd probably all agree, a make or break for the course. You've just
Okay.
run down 4 to 5 miles, mostly downhill. We say gravel, but it's really a service road. So there's washouts, there's rocks, streams depending on the weather. And now you're turning around after potentially blowing your quads out, and you've got to go back up it. And
Oh my.
so it's can be strategic. There's a lot of suffering, but I think a really cool point. Like if you're going to have an out and back, I think that's just a great place to have it. You come back up, you hit this aid station that you had just previously hit, what we've named the cabin, right at this old cabin off in the woods, some locals own, and trek all the way up. I mean, I would say it's 6 to 7 miles back up to what we call the loop aid station at Wiggins Springs. And then you hit the loop. So the loop is the most technical section of the trail. It heads out to Mount Pleasant. You kind of start on it, and for about a half a mile, you're thinking, oh, man, you're so grateful. This is beautiful, it's smooth. And then it kind of hits you. It's almost Pennsylvania mountain trail rocks,
Oh, wow.
all the way up. And the other thing I'll say we kept or added was summiting Mount Pleasant. So when you get halfway through that loop, you hang a slight right and you get to the top about a quarter mile up, and it's just this beautiful 180 view, pending weather. But it's just a great spot because on the course there's not as many open spots, and it's just really you get to that the kind of the highest point of the trail there. So we usually have a punch or something there. In the future we may have other surprises. But then you come back, you go around the outside of that Mount Pleasant loop, hit the same aid station for the third time, and then retrace your steps all the way back towards the finish, past the fish hatchery and the finish line. So it's a really cool course. I think really the best part is the variety of gravel, elevation change, smooth single track, technical single track, and Jeep road. It's a really nice blend to where if you're looking to go really fast, there's that opportunity in certain sections, but regardless, it's going to be a challenging course.
Awesome. So what is the ad for the 100K? Tim, go ahead and take this one.
The ad for the 100K. So where the turnaround is for the 50 miler, you keep going on the old course. And that's one of the things that we really like about how the tweaks that we made in the last few years is, the 2/3 of the race is kind of going the original route. So from the 50 miler turnaround, you keep going downhill another couple miles and you hit what's known as the Lynchburg Reservoir. And you kind of skirt around that edge on a gravel Jeep road for a bit. And then you start climbing for, I don't even remember, it's about 4 miles, 5 miles. And it feels long driving. But it's a climb. And you climb up to what used on the old point to point was Robinson Gap aid station. And that's now the turnaround. So it's not necessarily adding anything particularly scenic per se. We've got some ideas on some options to maybe add something, but that's going to take some more negotiating with the Forest Service. But what it does add is just kind of add some more grind, some real grinding course to it. So, yeah, Mike, it's interesting. You asked like, hey, why Mascus? Why did you guys run Mascus? And one of the things, I mean, Mascus, I think for all of us, but I know for me specifically, Mascus is what lit the fire for Ultra. It was just reading about this storied historic race. It started in 1983. Western States was 5, 6 years old at that point. I mean, it was really early on, and it was a highly, highly competitive race in the early 2000s, early 2010s. I think most people who are into ultra, we've seen the Unbroken movie where Jeff Rose pulls out the win at Western States over Anton Kropitschka and, all these other guys. And, it's interesting, you talk to Horton, and he ran Masochist in November and then won Western States the next June. And, he set the course record of Masochist at 6:27. Just absolutely blistering fast. And so it's really neat. You go back through the history of Masochist, and there's the list of names are, it's pretty impressive who all would come out for it. Ultra running's grown a ton. There used to not be as many races, so it hasn't been as popular as it was in the past. I think some of that was, it used to be one of the Montreal Cup races. Yeah, so I mean, it really was this race that brought the fast people out from all across the country and all across the world. I mean, they're in the early 80s, there's a lot of international runners coming in. So it's things like that where, for me, just starting up around the sport and like the lore of Mountain Masochist, which is 50 miles from point to point, was really cool. So 2023, if anybody's into Barkley, everybody knows Frozen Ed, one of Laz's buddies. Ed came out and ran Masochist, the 50K, in 2023, 75 years old. And we met him. I don't remember what race we're at. We just chatting with him, and he was like, "Oh, I ran Masochist back in 1985." And I just looked it up. He was 37 years old when he ran his first Masochist in 1985, and then he ran his fourth, I think, in 2023. And it's just that kind of thing. And he came out last year, and he lives in the area. He's like, "Oh, I'll be out at all these. It's so much fun to come out for the community." And there's a handful of Barkley finishers who come out and run Masochist pretty much every year. There's four or five guys who are out here most years. So it's really, I mean, what I love about Masochist and what we've really tried to be good stewards of is kind of the old school community. The you finish a race and you sit around and you, I don't know if this is if I can swear, but you talk shit. You talk crap on, you're trading stories, you're talking trash, you're sitting down, everybody's broken, everybody's exhausted, and it's the best feeling in the world when you can share a meal, share something to drink, talk trash, and everybody's sharing war stories. And that for me is what I loved about the sport, what I loved about the community is so many other sports. I did a triathlon years ago. I didn't talk to anybody. Nobody talked to me. You come to Ultra, and it's just like, you find your best friends, and two of my best friends are other guys on this call. Like, legit, we text all the time. My wife's like, "You guys are like middle schoolers." I'm like, "Yeah, we are," and
But
that's okay.
it's awesome, the relationships that you make in Ultra, and that's what attracted me. I wasn't a runner until I ran for the first time when I was 46. So
Nice. Awesome.
I started running when I was older than all of you. So, but I ran road races for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden I ran my first ultra when I was 50, and I fell in love with it because it was like, wait a second, these are people that you can talk with them, you can hang out with them, you can just share crap that's going on in life with people. And I fell in love with the ultra community. And I always tell people, I'll never podium. I'm probably one of the slowest back of the pack runners that you'll ever encounter. But you know what? Nobody looks at me and says, "Damn, do you have any speed buttons at all?" And you're accepted in this community, no matter how fast or slow you are. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just a weird fact, I was looking at Mountain Masochist. So Gary Robbins is one of the people that I look up to in the sport. Did you guys know that Gary Robbins finished second in 2008?
When he also ran the course the wrong direction.
No way.
Yeah.
Ask
So
Horton about it sometime.
yeah, Horton has a really good story, but very briefly, that Mount Pleasant loop where you end up going up to the summit, he ran around it and followed it correctly. And when he came back down, as he would say, everything told him to go right on, counterclockwise to finish the loop. And he did not. He went left and got back, and dazed, confused. Everyone's like, "You gotta go back." And he
Oh
had,
my gosh.
that adds easily to 2.5 miles or so, and just took off. And I think it was that year, and he still got second.
That's amazing. Yeah,
And
and I would put this up to anybody. Look at the finishes of Mountain Masochist and look at some of the names, and you will see some
oh
of
yeah.
the absolute legends of the ultra running sport.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, go back into the 80s and early 90s, and you like some Scotty Mills is in there. It's all kinds of people because there was just wasn't that many races back then.
But I mean, you go into like even today, and I mean, Chris Roberts has finished. So, I mean, we're talking people that are like even legendary today have run Mountain Masochist, and you guys get to direct it. That's pretty awesome.
Oh yeah. Don't take it for granted, for sure.
So how did that happen? How did Michael, Tim, Brenton, and Jordan end up being the race directors of Mountain Masochist?
Bren,
Should we share all the details?
I mean, some
What?
of the details.
Well, what I'll jump in. Brent, you can talk about how it, but that first year we all got to really know each other. We spent in 2020, we ran distance across trails and roads all the time, but I mean pretty much daily. But I can't tell you how many times on runs, just talking trash and just shooting the breeze, the thought of like, man, it would be awesome if we could take over Masochist. And I don't know why, but we're just like, we should do that. That would be great. How cool would that be? So there was a lot of conversation, and we had no reason to think that would even be possible. And then we got a call from Brent, and I'll let you go from there.
I don't know how or why or what transpired, but I got a call, or maybe it was a text from Clark Zealand, and he said, "Hey, you want to catch up for coffee one day? Want to talk to you about something." Or he may have said, "I want to talk to you about Masochist." And so we sit down to coffee, and he's like, "I'm looking to back out of Masochist. Are you interested in taking it?" And at the time, I was in what, the second year of being the RD for Holiday Lake. And I had a newborn at home. We were thinking about having a second kid. I didn't have any time to take on a race by myself. So Clark and I chatted for about an hour. We talked through some stuff, talked about life, the race, all sorts of stuff. And probably the moment I got in my car, I think I texted you guys. Was like, "Hey, so you wanna what do you think about taking on Masochist?" And I didn't, I wanted to get everyone's feedback before I went to Clark about it, but obviously we had talked about it a lot before that, never thinking that it would be possible. And then lo and behold, so it was a quick yes,
Yeah,
I think, from all of us.
I think right after that we were all pretty much like, yeah, tentative yeses from everyone. And I think we got together at your place around a, like a bonfire,
Oh, yeah.
just the three of us, and we zoomed in Newhall, because at the time he was living in Ohio, which was kind of funny, but he was planning to move back to Lynchburg. So we just kind of started going through like pros, cons, this, that, like how would we do it? What are we all on the same page? And I think, yeah, I mean, obviously, ultimately, we came to the conclusion that we knew what we loved about the sport, and we knew what we loved about Maskus, and we wanted it to stay alive. And we kind of had a good idea of how we wanted to do that. And so we kind of put our hands in and said, let's do it. And that
That's
was it.
awesome. And what year did you guys take over?
23.
Oh. So we kind of did a trial run the first year. We were still under Clark and Eco X because we needed a transition year, which was fine. But I think we have now been 2 years fully with just the four of us directing it.
Okay.
So three, but two officially.
Too officially. So now, with four of you race directing, how do you guys split up the responsibilities? Because I mean, race directing is, I always tell people, God bless the race directors, and please thank them, racers, when you go out and have the ability to run these races, because it's not an easy job. But how do you four split up the responsibilities?
It's total chaos.
But it
No,
works really well.
it's you know, I and I'll let them chime in, but briefly, like I do think it's like an organized chaos, and I think the only reason that works is because I think we kind of I think we all kind of understand each other's strengths pretty well. We were just so really so close-knit through COVID and all that stuff. Like, to Tim's point, like we were running together. It was like 20 hours a week. I mean,
Wow.
it was just all the time. We were at the track, we were in the mountains, we were at long runs, we did an AT 50-mile run. It was like we were always hanging out, and I think we just really got to understand what everybody could do. And so, we split out things like different administrative things. Brent has a lot had more experience with, merch and the connections we have with, Rabbit and Boco and different groups we work with. And so I think we slowly start divvying some of that out. And we have calls where we'll get together and say, okay, here are the dates. We're doing trail work or training runs and split things out. And so I think some of it happened organically, but I also love to think that it's kind of organized chaos.
That's awesome. Tim, jump in.
Yeah, I think Jordan hit it pretty well. It tends to be, lots of like shit talking and text, and then like, okay, but seriously, we need to figure out this, this, and this. That's kind of. But I think this past year, we finally said, hey, let's start. We started a spreadsheet, like an Excel. I mean, it's way more organized than I think it sounds, but we have a shared Google Drive. We do a lot of stuff in there, but we finally started being like, hey, here's all the different things we're going to do. Like porta-johns. Okay. Well, those get ordered from here. And this is, do it X number of weeks in advance, so forth and so on. But it's actually, I think, maybe one race director is easier in some regards, but I think, like Jordan said, we know each other's strengths and really enjoy working together. I find it's really nice to be able to share the load and not have to, have to think of everything. Yeah, so it's really nice to be able to
It's
kind of do
also
something with your buddies.
helpful to have a lawyer in the group so that he
Yeah.
can thrive in the group.
I was gonna say that because there are legal things that happen for race directing, isn't there, Brenton?
Forest Service. I think Tim's tried the last 2 years to get us a better deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done everything I can to try and make the deal a little bit better, but I get a polite, here's all my legal analysis of the statutes and why it doesn't need to be the way that they're doing it. And the response is, no, thank you. I'm just like, okay,
And
well, thanks.
I think I'll give a little plug here, like shamelessly. It doesn't have to be volunteering for Maskus, but I think that's what I've realized more with race directing is, we're not trying to be overly humble, but I don't think any of us would say like, hey, we're the best in our occupations, right? Like Brent and I are in operations management. Newhall has started and is proving very successful in like a an insurance company, and Tim with law. Like, we bring unique things to the table, but I think that's what's cool about things like a race or an aid station or prep or cleanup is like anyone that's like, man, I want to help, but I don't know how, is like, just show up. Because whether it's just being there for runners or whether it's keeping things straight or whether it's thinking of the small things, like there's so many things that play into it. And I think I've learned that more from working with a team directing the race is like, there are so many ahas we have where Tim will be like, well, why don't we just do this? And it's like, oh, I didn't think about that. Or Brent will jump in and like, but this is what happened with Holiday. I'm like, ah, we should adjust a little bit, and there are definitely race directors out there. I know there are, because I've been to their races where it's like, man, they are on point. But we have really benefited, I think, from the dynamic perspectives and just being open to, here's what I have to offer. And so if you're thinking about volunteering for a race, just go, just be there and be available. And there's something you're going to bring to the table.
And that is a great segue here, because Brenton, let's talk a little bit about volunteers for these races.
Ooh. Volunteers make a race work, makes it happen. If without volunteers, every race director would tell you that you don't have a race, period. And I will say I've got it pretty easy, relatively easy with Holiday Lake in terms of I got three aid stations and a turnaround aid station. So I don't need an army of volunteers. I have very good volunteers that are consistent. Blake Edmondson and the Blue Ridge Trail Runners, they handle one aid station. Butch Slavek and his wife, the last 3 years, have led the middle aid station and have done a fantastic job with a theme every year. It's been super fun. And then the other aid station has kind of been swapping out. Brian Million did one last year or 2 years ago. A couple of local peoples did it. So it's an effort to get volunteers. It's certainly not super easy. I've got it easier with Holiday Lake, but with Masochist, we've talked about even with the 100K, adding that. And the first thing we think about is radio guys and volunteers. Those are our first concerns. And people can think differently, but it truly is like that. Those are the first things that we think about anytime that there's a potential course change or we want to add a distance. Those are the two things that come to mind immediately because we don't want to overtax our volunteers or our radio guys because we need them. So we just try to work out the details on our end and then reach out to everybody. And it's super important. Everyone, all four of us on this call right now have run ultras and we've gone into aid stations where there's a volunteer who may have never run an ultra before, but they're willing to take your shoes off, take your socks off, clean you up,
Touch your feet.
touch your feet. They don't know who you are. And that's awesome. I love it.
Amazing. So, Tim, what are the cutoffs for Mountain Masochist, the cutoff times? So, kind of start with 50K and go up
Ooh.
to the 100K.
We're at 13 hours for the 50K and the well for 13 hours for the 50 miler. That's correct, right? You got right, guys?
Yeah, for both.
So
We have an easy, well, I don't want to say easy, it's extremely difficult, but we have a very nice cutoff for the 50K because we allow the same cutoff for the 50K that we have for the 50 miler. So
okay, cool.
it's a great first mountain 50K because it's very low pressure in that regard.
Yeah, and I think that works really well. And one of the things that's been done kind of historically is for runners over 60, if they want, they can start an hour earlier. So they'll have a little bit extra time there. And then for the 100K, you're asking me like time details, and I am an attorney, but man, Mike, I'm
For
not the guy to
the
ask Jordan is.
I'll jump in. So for the 100K, last year was the first year we did a 100K, and ultimately we jumped in because we had people we knew very well. We had some people reach out that were like, "Oh, I had to drop from my 100 mile or my 100K, be not even drop, like the race was canceled because of everything that North Carolina dealt with last year with the hurricanes and so on, and flooding and just a lot of really dramatic events and people working through stuff. So I think everyone understood that, but these people had trained for something, and all of a sudden we just said, we can't make a huge impact, but like we could. One, we said we could comp most of their cost to enter any of the distances. So that was a no-brainer. Like that's easy. But we said, would it be much to just extend it a bit? Which Tim described earlier, the 100K goes around the reservoir. It's beautiful. You do this big climb up towards the parkway. So we worked that out. Forest Service was cool. But at that point, we knew like our aid stations aren't overly ready for that. Our aid station captains or volunteers, like this is a month in advance. We could sit around Montebello Country Store until Sunday morning. I always stay there anyway. Like we weren't worried about us. So we made it a very strict cutoff of like, hey, this is 16 hours. Like it's a little stout, but that's what it's got to be. And other than one drop, we were happy that, out of the, I think maybe eight, like seven were able to finish in under the
Oh,
cutoff.
perfect. Wow.
It was, and some down to the last 10 minutes. It was really cool. It was close. It was intimate, and they got it done. It was a beautiful thing. But we did say like we still don't want to extend this thing well into the night, but we want to make sure people know that what they're getting into. So it's 17 hours as of now. So
Okay.
they start at 4:30, which is an hour before the 50 mile or 50K, which is the sort of a tenured runner start option. But that's when the 100K starts, and then they have 17 hours to get it done.
Awesome. So let's start with Brenton. Give me your best reason to sign up and run Mountain Masochist in 2025.
Ooh, well, weather permitting, I think it is the prettiest fall 50K, 50 mile, or 100K on the East Coast, hands down. When we were driving around marking last year, the colors, the trees were peak color around the reservoir and up by the cabin aid station. It was just like bright yellows and oranges. Sun was out, temperatures were mild. It was perfect. It was picture perfect.
Awesome. Tim, best reason to sign up and run Mount Meskis this year.
I have to echo Brenton. I think the colors are beautiful. Mount Pleasant, the overlook is awesome. But those things depend on weather, right? What I love about Meskis, my favorite thing about race directing is community at the end. And I talked about it earlier, but I adore that we've just it's just a family. And I know people throw that around a lot, but it is a fall gathering of ultra runners in Virginia, and you see people you haven't seen in sometimes years, and it's just sitting around. We provide free finish line food for runners, chili, one of Jordan's recipes, chili and bread, and we had a couple kegs last year. Just it was an awesome atmosphere. I think I had three or four fire pits going. Just so we've had the last 2 years have been beautiful weather, and it's made that atmosphere great. But the first
Awesome.
year we did the race, it was kind of pissy rain. Like it was crappy weather, but we still had a big group of people hang out all afternoon, just snuggled up under blankets. It was still a lot of camaraderie and hanging out and conversation. And to me, that's what it's about. Like running the distance is fine, but my favorite kind of races are the ones where when you're done, you grab a bowl of food, you sit down next to somebody you don't know and just say, "Hey, how was that?" And you find some of your best friends doing that. So that's why I say, come on out, run a race.
Absolutely. Cool. Jordan.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I'm gonna level it up one more bit. I'm gonna say, you should definitely come out and run it. And if you do, you should make every effort to make it a weekend event. So you really get the full experience when you come out Friday. If camping isn't sold out, camp there. If it is, reach out to us. The pre-race is just kind of old school. The fire department. It's amazing. They open us up. We have tons of pizza. Again, that's on us. We get some good Q&A from different people. We hang out and talk to each other. Then, we've got music going and fire pits, into the night. As long as, some people want to crash early, some don't. We've had great conversations meeting people and, exchanging information and staying in touch. And then that just transpires through the whole weekend. The racing is happening. We try to get out on the course and see people. We've had some great photographers the last couple of years to kind of catch stuff in the moment. And then to Tim's point, the finish line. I mean, we have people that have said, "Hey, me and my family are just gonna like help out. Let us do all the food." And so getting them prepped and they're cooking up food. And we say for the runners, to be honest, like we do, it's super low key, old school. We do chili, we do chips, we do toppings. And we make more than we can deal with. So honestly, we kind of just say, "Hey, friends and family, whatever." So I'm just going to throw that out there here for those that catch up on the podcast. But it's a great time, and a lot of people end up camping that night too. And so the whole experience is phenomenal. You get to be in the mountains, you get to be around people, that are like-minded, and you don't just kind of come, run, leave. You kind of really get to soak it up. And I think that, alongside the challenge of the course, is a beautiful thing.
That is awesome. Man, I'm ready to come out and volunteer this year.
Come on, man.
You may
Awesome.
just see me.
Yeah, do it.
Glad to have you.
Awesome. All right, so here's how we kind of wrap up. The name of the podcast is Living an Ultra Life. When you hear that phrase, the first thing that pops in your head, and let's start with the senior member of the crew, Mr. Tim Spaulding, going off to run Western States again this year. What's the first thing that pops in your head when you hear living an ultra life?
Oof. Balance and living life to the fullest. Sleep when you're dead. That's what I think
Yeah,
about. I
that's
mean,
deep.
like, and I think, for myself, and I know these guys and a lot of ultra runners out there, you've got kids, you've got spouse, you've got work, you have a lot of things going on. Like, you start out like, "Hey, what do you spend your time doing?" I'm like, "Man, I go to freaking soccer games. I go to like a bajillion soccer games with two of my kids playing and another playing baseball." Like, I'm in so many different things. But how do I find time to fit running in? I just don't sleep as much. And so, that whole old adage of like, "We'll rest when we're dead," that's kind of to me that works and that fits. But for anybody who gets up to do the early runs, sometimes you've only had 4 or 5 hours of sleep. But when you do drag yourself out of bed and you get going, you're like, "Hey, I'm doing this run. Today's a brick. I got to build this structure so I can run this race." It's always rewarding. It always pays dividends. So yeah, that's what I think about when I hear living an ultra life.
Awesome. So let's move to Mr. Brenton Swires, 2024 finisher of Western States. And I just mentioned that because Western States is like the, I call it the Boston Marathon of ultra running, but I think we may have to call Mountain Mascus the Boston Marathon of ultra running because it's been around longer. But so Brenton, living an ultra life, first thing pops into your head.
Western States is the Super Bowl of ultra running.
That's right.
There we go.
That's what I
We'll go
think.
with Super Bowl. Okay.
I like it. It's sort of along the same lines as Tim is I, and this is relevant because of last year with my training leading up to Western States, I can do more than I think I can do in terms of managing everything in my life, kids, wife, job, just everything, and train 60 to 80 miles a week for an ultra. And that means getting up early, butt crack of dawn to go out and do miles and run after work, run during lunch, just to get everything in. So it's not living a extreme life, but knowing that you can test the limits and still survive.
Awesome. And Mr. Jordan Guder, who has not yet run Western States,
That's
living an
right.
ultra life, first thing pops into your head.
Yeah, I think those all that stuff is good, and I think that's kind of what's coming to mind. I think kind of like I mentioned earlier, my intro into the world of ultra running, it's consistently overcoming, I can't do that. I think it definitely applies to ultra running, but I think it applies to so much more in life. It's just, what's that thing that you would say, no, not me, or I could never do that? And it's, yes, you can. It's just how you get there and overcoming that. And I'm still doing that. I mean, I'm coming back from almost a 6 to 9 month hiatus. I didn't mention it, but I'm in grad school and it was just wild. And it like fell off the side and going to run a race with Brendan in June. And I feel the same way. It's like, this is not a no, I can't. It's just, how do I get there?
Awesome. Congratulations on grad school, also.
Yeah.
That's adding one more big thing. Well, guys, I thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. It's been such an honor, and it has been a journey to get to this point because I've been wanting to do this for a while. But thank you so much for taking your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Mike.
Mike.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. Really appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time on Living an Ultra Life.